Then Jesus told them a parable about the need to pray always and not to lose heart. He said, "In a certain city there was a judge who neither feared God nor had respect for people. And in that city there was a widow who kept coming to him and saying, 'Grant me justice against my opponent.' For a while he refused, but later he said to himself, 'Though I have no fear of God and no respect for anybody, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I'll grant her justice, so that she may not wear me out by continually coming.' And the Lord said, 'Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God grant justice to his chosen ones who cry to him day and night? Will he delay long in helping them? I tell you, he will quickly grant justice to them. And yet, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth?" The Gospel of our Lord. Please be seated. So pray persistently and not lose heart. How many of you were praying really hard at the bottom of the ninth inning last night? Well, I don't know about your best way to pray. My best scene for praying is in my living room early in the morning before anybody else is up, about 5 in the morning. I light a candle, and I have coffee in hand and my Bible out, and it's my time of kind of getting centered with God, praying over issues of the day, and ultimately I'm turning over myself and the church and the world, everything, over to God. Even though if I forget it once in a while in the day, I start my day remembering it's all in God's hands anyway. And it's really a nice centering, calming time, you know. I love it. But today in our readings, we see some disturbing, jarring images of prayer. The first one, Jacob, whose name gets changed to Israel in this situation, which means he who strives and fights with God. But anyway, here's Jacob scared to death on the eve of a reunion with his brother Esau, who you remember, Jacob's name was Trickster, and he and his mother tricked his twin brother out of the family inheritance, Esau, and Esau wanted to kill him, so he took off for years. Now he's coming back with his whole family and animals and everything, and he gets to the Jabbok stream and scared to death, if you can imagine, what's going to happen when he meets his brother the next day. And what we hear is that he goes off by himself and he wrestles with a messenger of God all night, wrestling, struggling, tussling, and finally, but refusing to let go. And he says, "I'm not going to let go until you bless me." And he gets his hip knocked out of socket, but he walks away with a blessing. Hobbles away, I suppose you'd say. Huh? Or this image. Jesus tells the story about a widow, right? And immediately after telling his disciples, you know what, you're in for some really tough times real quick here, because he's on his way to his arrest and his execution, right? And after the resurrection, the tough times, because the early church is being persecuted. By who? By the corrupt and oppressive Roman government, and even by the Jewish leaders who have colluded with the force of Rome and against justice, really, you know? And they come down hard on that early Christian community. A lot of them get executed, stoned to death, if you remember all those stories. And in the face of the corrupt officials and all the injustice, Jesus says to them, to his disciples, pray. Not just calmly and devotionally like I do in my living room every morning, which is nice and centering. Pray like this widow who's facing a corrupt, unrighteous judge who could care less about God, he could care less about people, he could care less about relieving the oppression and bringing justice to oppressed people. He could care less about that stuff. But he says, pray like this. Look at this. Here she is screaming at him in front of him, and then she, even after business hours, she traces him down the street, for heaven's sakes, for days on end. Give me justice, give me justice, give me justice, right? On and on, driving him crazy. And in fact, when she comes before him like this in this scene here, the judge says, I'm going to give her what she wants, because pretty soon, the Greek verb is, she's going to box me in the ears. That's how close she's getting to him. She's so ferocious that she's going to beat the heck out of him if she doesn't get what she wants. Isn't that interesting? And this is a powerless widow. Remember, women didn't have a lot of rights in that society, and especially if you're a widow, if your husband died, you were at the mercy. You didn't have an inheritance. You were at the mercy of your husband's family, if they would take care of you, or somebody else. But this woman clearly had nobody to stand up for her to go to a judge, so she went by herself, you know? And so here she is, and in front of this corrupt judge, you know, a politically powerless widow who refuses to be victimized by a corrupt system, an unjust system, right? So there she is. And Jesus says to us, and won't God grant justice to his chosen ones, his loved ones, who cry out to him night and day? Won't God do that? Will he delay long in helping them? He says, I tell you, he will quickly grant justice to them. And of course, quickly is different in God's time than it is in ours, isn't it? And remember, what we think might be just, what we're praying for, may not be what God has in mind. We might get surprised. In fact, you know what? It might be better than we expected even. How would you like that? So, we're called to pray like this, and yes, certainly like this, yeah, but also at times like this, wrestling with God, as if our life depended on it, you know? And like this, nagging God, pursuing God, grabbing God by the arm, and insisting God bless me before I let go, huh? We're coming up on All Saints Day and All Saints Sunday in a couple weeks. If you've never been part of this here at Lord of Life, we light candles in memory of all of our loved ones who have gone before us in the faith and gone to be with the Lord. It's a very powerful service. But it brings me back to many years ago at Emmanuel Lutheran Church. I was serving in Milwaukee. And one year at Emmanuel, from the beginning of February until Easter, about 2 months later, 7 people died suddenly. 2 of them were my closest confidants in that congregation. They died within a month of each other of heart attacks. And I was devastated, you know. I was just exhausted. I was depressed. I had a hard time functioning after all those deaths. I was just wiped out. And then I got another phone call on Tuesday morning. Pastor, it looks like Rosalie isn't going to make it. Could you come and be with us at the hospital? So there I was, driving down highway of 35th Street in Milwaukee on the south side to St. Luke's, and it was pouring rain. I could barely see, but I was also sobbing. I couldn't see because of that. So I finally pulled over. I couldn't see. It wasn't safe. And I sat there, and I pounded on the steering wheel, and I yelled at God and used some unprayerful words toward God, as you can imagine. And finally, I just finally said, okay, God, this is it. If anybody else dies around here, I have had it. I am quitting, and I mean it. Rosalie died that day. But then, at Emmanuel Church, nobody died for a whole year. I think an answer of prayer. I'd call that a little justice for me and for that congregation. Wrestle with God, you betcha. And how about on a more societal level? Praying for justice. Do you know, this is Bishop Desmond Tutu of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. You know how long black South Africans prayed and sang and challenged in the Black South African Freedom Movement before that oppressive, hateful apartheid system was broken down? From 1900 to 1994, there was active resistance against that oppressive system. 94 years. And a large factor was that there was a vast number of black Lutherans in South Africa. And if you are good at your Lutheran theology, you'll remember this. Luther taught us that there are two kinds of kingdoms in the world. There's the kingdom on the right, which is the kingdom of heaven, the eternal rule of God over everything. And then there's the kingdom on the left, which is the kingdoms of this world, the governments of this world. And Luther insisted that God's control, God ruled even over governments of this world. And the role of governments in this world, Luther said, was to bring justice, fairness, equity, order to society. And when governments become corrupt and self-centered and don't do that, Luther insisted that it's the duty of every Christian to resist that government, to call it to account. That's our Lutheran theology. So that's what was going on in South Africa for 94 years. Just think of that. How long? And yet, in that time, what I'm reminded of is a quote that Dr. Martin Luther King often used. And this was from an abolitionist pastor named Theodore Parker in 1853, when slaves were being treated the worst in this country of anything, just before, you know, the Civil War. "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice." So, and it did, at the expense of the execution and imprisonment of many Christians in South Africa over this time. But here's an interesting, big surprise to me. Do you realize that when apartheid was dismantled finally, when that government came down, it wasn't just the oppressed who were liberated? The oppressors were given a chance to come to those reconciliation courts and confess their crimes to the commissions. And if you came and confessed your crimes, you were forgiven, and that was the end of it. You were set free. Wow, think of that. Not just the oppressed, but the oppressors get set free when justice happens. Now, the South African government has its own problems these days, as you know, and some of you would say, well, it's just as corrupt as any government now run by blacks. Well, yeah, okay. But you know what? Jesus wasn't naive about the reality of corruption in governments. And we shouldn't be either. Any government, no government is perfect. Whatever the government is, we are called to be persistent, nagging, wrestling for justice. That's what we're called to as Christians. We're called, of course, nagging, yeah, wrestling and nagging if we'll be like that woman until God, but remember the God who loves us, right? Till that God answers your prayer. We're to persist, yes, in prayer for the nations of the world, those governments. The word righteousness, by the way, which shows up in the Timothy reading that you heard a little earlier from Beth, and in the gospel reading is tzaddik. Tzaddik means a variety of things. It means righteousness, means rightness, uprightness. It means things being put right. It means justice also. It means a lot of those things. So we pray for righteousness, uprightness, for things to be put right in our nation these days, huh? And in our leaders and in our people. We're to pray persistently for things to be put right in our communities and for there to be upright and just leaders in our communities. And we're to persist in praying for things to be made right in our families, where things can be so screwed up some days, can't they? And we're to pray, yes, especially for righteousness, for ourselves to be put right with God, with ourselves, and with the people around us. To pray things like, God, create in me a clean heart. Renew a right spirit in me. Yes, and all these things, pray persistently, insistently, and God will act. And in God's good time, yes. But be assured, God will act. In the meantime, keep wrestling.